times. August 1990, the Lutheran did an excellent feature article called The Right to Die, Pulling the Plug on Life. It talks about a lot of real life families dealing with a number of issues that we've touched on and some we haven't. I'm happy to share my copy of it, or if any of you keep years worth of Lutherans, August 1990, I really encourage you to take a look at it. You may well have it in the village at some place too.
You'll notice we've got several pieces of newsprint on the board here, and these are represent most of what we did during that first session. I'm just going to briefly review a few things so that everybody's on board together. We had came up with a common list of common terms in ethics, and wanted to know that the way we're defining an ethical issue is really any course of action that affects human well-being. So any kind of interaction between a people that affects their well-being in some form, we're defining as an ethical issue. And then morality, that part of ethics, deals with choices and behaviors which we consider to be right or wrong. You can think of it as the oughtness of something. I ought to do something or I ought not to do it. And ethics, then, is when we take, in a systematic or a disciplined way, try and formulate moral principles, rules, and standards that help us to make these kinds of ought decisions, how to choose between right and wrong behaviors and actions. So those are, we just put up a list here. If it's helpful for you to read them over and see what's said, fine. You did this a ton to get a common vocabulary. This gets in the way of your discussion, though, just ignore it, because most of these things are things that we do intuitively. This is a way for us to talk together. We also talked about, in some in terms of different ethical approaches, there are two fundamentally distinctive ways that people tend to choose one or the other. The deontological way of making ethical decisions starts by emphasizing ethical obligations and rules that guide human behavior. That is, the means, the rules that guide us. And these tend, it's oftentimes called absolutist because it tends to say that these are inviolable rules of behavior. Things like don't steal, don't lie, always tell the truth are the kinds of rules that this form of ethics would emphasize. The other form is what we call consequentialist or ends-oriented ethics, which begins by and puts primary emphasis on weighing the probable outcomes or consequences of any action and trying to decide which are the best or which are the most positive of the choices that one makes. Deontological, the first one, tends to emphasize the individual. So if there's a conflict between the individual and the community, it'll tend to emphasize the individual's rights. Consequentialist tends to emphasize the community or the larger group. It aims at trying to maximize human welfare. It's oftentimes talked about as the greatest good for the greatest number of people. And then we recognize that oftentimes people operate out of what we would call a mixed or a contextual ethics, which draws on both of these, uses obligations and rules and principles as guidelines, but also considers the consequences in coming to decisions. So we lay that out, and we're going to come back to that as we debrief the ethical case study today. The other thing that we did during that time was to just review some basic ethical principles that are particularly important in healthcare or biomedical ethical decision things, such as the fundamental one of respect for persons. Now, you can look through each one of these. Some of them, the names may be unfamiliar, like non-maleficence, but the concept, don't intentionally harm an innocent person, is one that we're all familiar with. The only thing I would point out here, again, is for somebody this is review, the first seven of these are what we would call the deontological or absolutist principles. These are the ones that are based in the intrinsic worth or value of all persons and therefore are considered inviolable, such as respect for persons, autonomy and self-determination, honesty, fidelity, those kinds of things. These are true regardless of the consequences. Now, the 8 through 9 are what we would call the consequentialist principles. That is, all three of these take into consideration probable consequences or outcomes. And so things like utility, trying to get the greatest good for the greatest number, or burden versus benefit, evaluating what the possible benefit will be against the possible burden, are consequentialist ones. And when these are in conflict, then the ethical dilemma is when two or more of these issues are in conflict. You have to choose between respecting one or the other. That's what constitutes an ethical dilemma, and that's what we're going to be focusing on in our case study today. The final thing that I want to mention is that we are, for the sake of doing these case studies this week, have introduced one particular model of ethical decision-making that's quite often used in healthcare-related issues. And it has two modes to it. The first section is doing the analysis of the situation, such as gathering the relevant facts and information, then out of that, identifying what the ethical issues are that are involved and where the dilemma is, that is, where is the conflict between two or more of these. And then moving to generating different alternatives and examining the consequences of those. That's the first part of it. The second part then is where ethics comes in, and that is doing a moral assessment, going back and examining each one of these alternatives and their consequences in light of the principles. Which principles are being respected, which ones are being violated, and how do you justify that decision? Assessing the motives that are involved in each one of these. And then finally, after you've generated several alternatives and considered the different consequences in the moral assessment, choosing one of those, making your decision, and being aware of how you would justify that decision or alternative as opposed to others. I'll come back to this when we introduce the case in terms of what we want to focus on today. But at this point, I'll turn it over to Mary to introduce our topic for today.
Okay, a big topic for today is suicide. Sometimes I feel like we're bringing in too much heaviness to the village. So I'm glad the sun's out and people take time off to take hikes. And we have one day off this week. I forget which one it is. Just a few comments by way of introduction to the topic. First, generally about suicide, some things to be keeping in mind is to think about the traditional historical, moral, and legal sanctions against suicide. They come out of our religious tradition, come out of our legal traditions, and sort of be keeping that in mind. Although we will encourage you not immediately to start only at the gut level by saying suicide is this. Bad, good, always wrong, always fine, whatever. We're going to encourage you to think a little more, in a little more complex way today about that. But obviously, we need to bring our understandings and feelings about suicide to this sort of discussion. Secondly, is the question of rationality. Can suicide ever be a rational decision? If so, what must go into that? How do we know if somebody who does commit suicide is a rational being at the time of the decision? A lot of conflict about that in this healthcare era right now, and we'll talk more about that with today's case study. Today's study doesn't directly talk about the idea of assisted suicide, whether that be by a healthcare professional, primarily a physician, or by a friend or family member. Many of us probably know of situations where family members or friends or healthcare professionals have aided and abetted a suicide, if you will. Without having that be known. This does not particularly address it, although in the case study there is the potential for a friend to be assisting in the suicide. So it is a related issue, although not directly in today. Last sort of general notion about suicide in general is to consider the question, sort of spiritually, theologically speaking, whether you each believe that physical life is an absolute value. It is something to ponder, whether our physical life is an absolute value. And we'll get more into that, I hope, with the moral assessment piece of the case study. Then today's case study is about suicide in a person with AIDS, full-blown AIDS. There are a few specifics I just want to talk about briefly with AIDS and suicide. One is that some studies, particularly a large study done at Cornell in 1988, seem to indicate that suicide is as much as 66 times more common in people with AIDS than in people with other chronic or terminal illnesses. That is not even more than people sort of who aren't sick. That's people who are sick with AIDS are 66 more times to commit suicide than people who are sick with other things. Now, it's a difficult study to do, obviously. People don't talk about suicide. It's difficult to come up with statistics if somebody shoots himself. Sometimes we don't know if that person had AIDS or not. Or somebody takes an overdose of pills. We don't always know if that person had AIDS. So bear in mind that those studies have a lot of difficulties, but generally speaking, people across the country who work in AIDS projects in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, New York, many other major metropolitan areas, say they do believe there's a much higher rate of suicide in people with AIDS. Interestingly, one other major study said that people who are initially diagnosed with HIV, that is the virus and not necessarily full-blown AIDS, if they get proper counseling about that test and what it means for their lives, aren't at any higher risk than the rest of the population for suicide. So we're talking primarily about people who are dealing with full-blown AIDS, and primarily, most of the studies say, with people who are beginning to feel the effects of dementia, which is a memory loss, a progressive memory loss that a number of people with AIDS get towards the end, or people who are becoming much more physically debilitated and then dependent on caregivers. So that's the time when suicide becomes a greater risk. Unlike most illnesses, people who have AIDS have very commonly, in this country and other countries in the world, seen many people they know and love die of AIDS. Many of us who get cancer haven't necessarily seen somebody die a death of cancer, although that is becoming more common too. Those of us who have end-stage lung disease don't necessarily see somebody else die of end-stage lung disease. People with AIDS have incredibly personal, difficult experience with loss of people they know and love with AIDS. So that may add an additional psychological, spiritual burden to these folks that maybe the rest of us can't fully grasp, and that's something to keep in mind that's unique about AIDS. And lastly, though AIDS is currently seen by most people as an incurable illness, we have no cure for AIDS, the course of the disease is extremely uncertain. Somebody could die next week of an AIDS-related illness who feels fine today. Somebody today could be diagnosed with an AIDS-related illness and go back to work and feel fine next week. And the course and the progression of the disease is often like this. It's a major roller coaster, unlike a lot of chronic and or terminal illnesses. So that makes the uncertainty of the future very difficult for people with AIDS. Also, with the tremendous amount of work and research trying to figure out a cure both for AIDS itself and for the diseases that are caused by AIDS, or as a part of the syndrome of AIDS, there's always a hope for people with AIDS that maybe doesn't exist for people with other diseases immediately. So it's a different psychological burden to both have this incredible uncertainty and this high degree of hope that people live with. So I urge you to sort of keep that in mind as we talk through the case today. That is all I'm going to say by way of introduction, unless people have comments or other just ideas thinking about AIDS and suicide before we get into the case. We made the decision, Dan and I, to not ask for people's personal experience with suicide at this point in a large group. I think that could be very difficult for many of us to talk about, but we certainly encourage that kind of discussion in the smaller groups or with either of us individually later if that becomes a need. But anything sort of in general you want to ask or make comments about this particular AIDS program?
With the AIDS suicide, has there been any kind of a distinction between whether those are victims of AIDS because of drug-related involvement? Is there a support system in the gay community that is greater than say in the drug community? I would think that's the truth.
It's a very good question. Yeah. It's a good hypothesis. I haven't seen any data about it per se. One may also wonder too that if people in the gay community probably have seen many more people die than people in the IV drug using community to this point in this country. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say. Now, if you go to certain countries in Africa, whole families have died. And you wonder about the support system sort of emotionally within a family, and then the formal sort of government or agency support system that's lacking in many developing world countries. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen data. It's a good question to ask, because obviously that has a lot of impact on whether people want to end their life or not. Mm-hmm. Kind of support.
I think it's always important to pay attention to anybody that has even mentioned that I'm going to shoot myself or I'm going to do away with myself, and try to get help for them, to let them know that they're not alone in their dilemma. Mm-hmm.
Professionals always say any statement about suicide is not to be ignored.
That's right.
Most of us have suicidal thoughts at some point. It's fairly natural and common throughout the population. Most of us don't express them. By the time we express them, we generally mean something by it. Mm-hmm. So that's a good point. Yeah.
In our faith, case study today, and this person is having some dementia. Is that right?
No, this person does not.
This is a medical question. Are we to assume that this person is far enough along that it's unlikely or impossible, I suppose, that they could recover to the point of being like normal life?
Good segue right into the Pascal case study.
Yeah,
let's
I
do
think
that.
What we'll do at this point is we're going to do like we did yesterday and get us into smaller groups for the case study itself and do the first step together, gathering relevant facts and information. Then we can address a question like that once we've read through the case. And if the people have other questions they want to bring up at that point, we can do that. But we want to get you into the groups discussing it. The same kind of ground rules as we did before. If you break up into groups of 4 to 6 folks, and make sure that at least 2 or 3 of the people in that group are people you don't know, so that we get some mixture and then some cross-fertilization of different ideas and values in this. And we will hand out, we've got a few more copies today. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and read this so that we're all following along and so the tape picks it up. And then we'll do step one of the model together and then talk about what we want you to emphasize in the rest of the model. Matthew is a 32-year-old, single, gay, white male who has kept his identity secret from family, co-workers, and all but a few friends. He is Catholic, though has quit attending Mass due to his physical condition. He has a diagnosis of AIDS with Kaposi's sarcoma, a cancer, invading his face, hands, and intestinal tract. It is nearly impossible for him to eat, and even swallowing is very painful. He recently had to quit work and go on disability. Matthew is admitted to the intensive care unit with an overdose of his pain medication. He tells everyone at the hospital that it was accidental, but tells you, his close friend, that he intended to end his life. The social worker calls to tell you Matthew is ready to go home and that he is refusing to have a visiting nurse come to his home. What we would like you to focus on as Matthew's friend is what is the ethical thing for you to do in this situation. Where Matthew is going out of the hospital, you know he has made an attempt on his life. Others involved in the case do not know that, and the social worker has called you to inform you that Matthew is going home and will not have a visiting nurse come to his home. So let's take a few minutes just to clarify, make sure we've got the relevant facts and information.
Let me clarify one thing that this gentleman asked, pointing at me. Matthew does not have any diagnosis of dementia. He doesn't have any obvious memory loss. However, with AIDS, dementia starts very, 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 very subtly, and sometimes it's difficult to know. So there certainly is.
Did you say subtly or suddenly?
Subtly, very subtly and slowly, mostly. Unless you have some sort of brain degeneration of a virus, another virus or something that's quick. So there is a slight chance that he's got some beginning dementia that nobody has picked up, but he has no diagnosis of that. So generally speaking, we assume he's clear-headed.
If this friend went to a social worker or somebody involved with his case, what is that social worker, and said that this person was suicidal or had tried to commit suicide, what would your, what do you have to do about that, if anything, as a social worker? Do you have to?
The social worker, as a nurse, as a physician, as any other mental health professional person, we would have to not let him go in the hospital, and he'd have to have a psychiatric evaluation before he left. And if the psychiatric evaluation found him to be suicidal, then he would probably be put in a psych unit.
How did he contract AIDS?
We don't know for sure. He is a gay male. Likelihood of sexual contraction of virus.
Or needles?
Don't know that he was a drug user, but it's possible.
Would the hospital really not know that the, wouldn't they suspect that this was an overdose that was intentional?
Probably a suspicion, yeah. No way to know for sure. Maybe he's a little forgetful.
But he's not a hemophiliac.
Not a hemophiliac, no.
That's right. But he's kept his identity secret, is that of being gay or of having AIDS or both?
Both.
And what's the prognosis of this cancer? What is his life expectancy from this point on?
Well, this particular case of Kaposi sarcoma was pretty advanced. He had lesions all over his face, all down his throat and intestinal tract that were growing, and he'd been treated and was being treated with chemotherapy internally and with radiation externally to try to heal that, but it had not been very successful. So the issue was whether they were going to grow enough so he would either choke or couldn't eat at all this way, and somehow he'd have to be fed.
And his quality of life is?
It's rough. It's rough. I mean, he can take care of himself. He walks around and uses the bathroom and can get liquids down. It's painful. But he's okay.
Hmm?
For that. Oh, one more and we'll move on.
Do we know if the friend is his lover or just a friend?
Friend is not his lover, it's a friend. Yeah.
Does that friend know he has AIDS?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that?
Friend knows he has AIDS. Okay.
Mary?
Yeah.
Has the hospital worked out a feeding plan with him?
Dietitian has seen him. Yeah, given him suggestions for liquid. Yeah, liquid and mashed kind of diet stuff. Yeah.
What is the question again?
Yeah,
the question is, you are the
what
friend.
What is the ethical thing to do as the friend?
As the friend.
You are the friend.
And here's what we'd like you to focus on as we come to that today. We really want to focus on a couple of the steps in the model. We've gone through step one here. We'd like you to spend some time, go fairly quickly into seeing what you think are the ethical issues involved and which ones are in conflict. We've got the list of them here. You may generate other ones. But what we'd really like you to do is to spend some time together generating at least 3 or 4, possibly 5 or 6, alternatives that you could do as a friend. And to explore together what the consequences of those would be, each one of those different alternatives that you have as a friend. And then to move to step 4 and assess those alternatives and consequences from an ethical perspective, from the relevant values and principles, from your own faith stance, whatever informs your decision-making in an ethical form. So to spend time generating alternatives and examining what the consequences would be, both good and bad consequences, short and long-term, and then to spend time assessing each one of these alternatives and their consequences from an ethical perspective, and that is the rightness and wrongness of it in light of these different principles. You may want to take each alternative and say, which principle is it respecting, which one is it violating, and how do I feel about that? Before then, maybe taking the last 5 minutes or so to look at questions of motive and especially choosing one alternative and knowing how to justify it. Again, we mentioned today is a day where faith perspective is going to be particularly important. So as you go through steps 4, 5, and 6, pay attention to how your own faith ideals or perspectives influence how you decide that. Any questions on just what we're doing before we go in? John?
I just have one question. Confident. Has he confided to his friend or asked his friend to keep this quiet? And that he doesn't, he's thinking about suicide, or he did the suicide. Is he confiding him and says, don't tell anybody?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say that. He has told his friend, you're the only one who knows, don't say anything.
So he has asked the friend to keep this confidential, that this was an initial suicide attempt.
Okay, tape can go off.
Tape can go off. Mary and I, we wander around the next 15 minutes just listening in, so just ignore us. We want to just get a feel for the conversations.
What I'd like to do to get us started is I'm going to ask each group to give me one of the alternatives you came up with, and we're going to just list those on the board quickly. So each group.
This is not necessarily the one you chose.
Yeah.
Just we want to get all the different alternatives out there.
Just give us one.
Okay, we're going to go talk to this sick person's priest.
All right, good. Talk to him. Provided Matthew tells you who the priest is. Yeah.
Oh, we already
know.
We're
going to
church.
We're going to church.
I knew
that
we were
going to
get counseling for ourselves.
Okay, the friend's still there. Okay? Is that a good thing here?
Yes.
Oh,
talk to them about in the end, respect whatever decision they make.
Okay, twofold decision. Talk to them about it.
Talk to who?
Talk to Matthew about his decision, and in the end, respect whatever he decides. Okay. Group in here.
Ask him how we can possibly help him. What does he actually want us to do?
Okay. What do you want from me, Matthew? I'm your friend. What are you saying to me? Okay. Got that one?
Is that close enough to talk to Matthew, respect his decision?
No, it's a little different. Clarify what he wants from me.
Yeah, I mean, if he says, I want to help you suicide, that's one thing. If he says, I
just want you to know because I love you, but that's different from asking for help to do it. Okay. Yep. Back here, maybe.
Help him to review what his options are and get him connected with support groups or home for men dying of AIDS or.
Okay. Sort of a subset of talking to Matthew, let's put respect his decision, connect him up with resources that are possible under respect decision. Good. Back here, do you have?
Tell the visitor, or the, Matthew, who you could sort of end the relationship, that's not the end.
Quit talking to Matthew, just check out of his life. Okay, that's a good option. Hey, you want people to be creative and go through all the possibilities. That's what we're about here. Very good. Thank you very much. A courageous option on your part.
We didn't cover the option of just turning him in, which...
Okay, then there's the option of turning him in, calling the social worker or somebody. And say he's going to...
We put this as turning him in or calling the social worker.
As a social worker, I'd rather say call the social worker. Less punitive. Okay, here?
Well, this is a subset of talking to Matthew, but there's two ways to do that. One is simply to listen to try to have him work out his own ideas, but the other one is much more active than that. Try to find ways and venues in which he would consider himself to suggest things actively so that he thought that the remaining life is worth living as opposed to committing suicide.
Okay, so the first one is close to this clarify what Matthew wants is an active listening.
Yeah.
The other is an active, almost counseling mode.
Let's see under what conditions you might want to keep living.
Okay. Yeah, really actively being a friend /counselor type person with some skills probably. I mean, this is particular. Other alternatives we've missed here.
Yeah, we've talked about, not something we really liked, but we talked about contacting the family to let them know what was going on.
Okay, contact his family and tell them. With or without his permission.
Right,
Okay, we got both options. Contact the family. Others?
Well, I was thinking that one of the things is he's very isolated. There's only one, there are probably other friends that know, but he doesn't know they know. And it seems to me that his isolation is part of the despair that he's in. Right. And he really needs to have that opened up. And if there were some way that you could encourage him to use the network of friends that he has and then perhaps approach the problem of letting his family, making some kind of reconciliation with his family.
Okay, sort of the combination of connecting with resources and or checking with the family and trying to maybe mend whatever that separation has been.
Well, the one more obvious one is I want to commit suicide, let's go for it and figure out a way to do it.
Okay.
Assist the suicide.
We're going to cut off the alternatives. Clearly there are more than 3 to 5, right? Thank you very much for being creative about it because that is very important in the whole ethical process. Now, assuming some of you maybe came to a conclusion as a group, did anybody decide as a group to go with one alternative? Or was there conflict sort of in every group? Anybody agreed unanimously?
We were pretty close. Okay. 4 of us wanted to go to the priest without asking Matthew because we were afraid maybe he'd say no. And 2 people wanted to ask him first, but they did really want to go to the priest.
Okay, we got a strong priestly. Okay, let's do that.
Let's just get a sense of things. A show of hands here.
All right, how many said?
You had to choose. That's the whole thing here.
I want to be selective about the priest.
We're just in a positive quick sense. I mean, we know that, right? What? I got 7.
How many as the friend would you counseling for yourself?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, you only vote for one of these.
You only vote once.
Oh, this is what you decide to do.
All right,
let's start with the friendship counseling.
No, you better go back to talk to priests and change their vote.
How many choose to talk to priests as your main course of action?
You only get one choice.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All right, we'll leave that at 7. You yourself are going to go get counseling.
The get counseling though is to find out how to work with them.
You only got one choice right now.
Yeah, but I mean that's an argument.
Yeah. It doesn't preclude other things.
That would be
the first
step.
What's
your first
step? 5, 6, 7, 8. How about chose to assist Matthew in suicide?
No,
No one chose that option.
At least not publicly.
Smart move, considering the legal questions about that. How about talk to Matthew and respect his decision? With an aim towards connecting you now with other people. 1, 2, all right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. All right. We understand that this is, we're putting this much more in black and white than you would probably do.
Because clarify, man, that's actually the same.
Yeah. We got one. 26. All right.
End the friendship. How many of you would just ignore Matthew now? No more contact. Okay? It's not publicly. Okay.
That's not
how many of you would call the social worker?
How many called the social worker to tell the social worker?
They're making the assumption they knew it was me. How many of you would say what you need to do is actively be a friend, including counseling, be there, doing whatever he's asking you to do short of assisting the suicide is what I'm assuming. Okay. Okay. The numbers don't matter a whole lot. 2, 3.
You got about 3 here.
And how many of you would contact the family with or without permission? Without. Anybody contact the family without permission?
Okay.
Good. All right.
All right. Let's. What we want to do is try and flesh out what you saw as the ethical issues or dilemmas with each of these. And we're not going to have a lot of time to do this, so maybe we should just take the top 3 or 4 vote getters and just quickly see what you saw. For those of you who talked, well, let's start with the largest group of people, the people who decided that for them the ethical thing to do was to talk to Matthew, respect his decisions, and try and connect with others. What did you see as the primary ethical principles involved in this, and where was the dilemma?
Confidentiality.
And does that conflict with anything?
Versus him taking his life, we assume that was the option. Yeah. Is.
Okay, versus harm to himself
harm
or
him.
Okay.
Yeah.
What were there other ones involved here?
I heard autonomy.
Okay.
Honesty.
Most consistent with the means oriented one. I mean, you knew what the end result was going to be, pretty much. So, in the long term, so you're trying to make this easy in the end process in the short term. Person, so you're looking at the meaning.
So a lot of them were deontological, is what you're saying. A lot of them were, that's right. Somebody's over here saying honesty and fidelity together.
Okay. But I heard someone saying, it sounded to me like you were also talking possibly about burden benefit kind of thing. Is intervening at this point going to cost him more benefit versus the burden it does, or more burden versus the benefit? Did that enter into anybody's discussion as well?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody talk about burden benefit with family?
Yes.
Well, what did that?
Well, for one thing, if you don't contact the family, the burden is now they have a son who killed him. He committed suicide. He had AIDS, and he was gay, and you didn't know any of these, and he never felt that he could confide in you in any of these things. What kind of a parent were you? You know,
that could burden a parent or
anything. I would think so. If you're a close friend and you've known somebody for a lot of years and you've established this relationship, the family knows you as his friend and would approach you also.
This family was extremely separate from this guy for many years, had no idea who his friends were, where they worked.
We kind of thought that maybe the family wasn't nearby or something, because it seems like it would be obvious that he was sick with the cancer and whatnot. And so I kind of thought maybe autonomy versus burden benefit, because he should have the right to choose, you know, versus you know, if you call this family that lives far away, and I don't know that they do or not, but they come running, you know, to try to, I don't know, do all the things that he doesn't want to do.
If they do.
Maybe his family
Did anybody look at the issue of, or the basic principle that's foundational, many of the others, respect for a person that is intrinsic value of life itself? Was that in conflict with anything as you saw them here?
Well, yeah, we just touched on it, but it was sort of the fact that he's living now, and even though he is terminally ill and has a lot of pain left, is that more valuable in and of itself than his own wish to die?
So it's really autonomy in some way versus the respect for life or intrinsic value of life,
yeah,
versus his
right,
his right to choose what he does with his life. I think that's pretty clear.
We're concerned about Matthew's feelings on that because of his strong
as a Catholic
practicing Catholic mm-hmm. until of his illness. More so than our own feelings about that.
Yeah, that's right. And that's, it's one reason I made that clear, because he still considered himself Catholic, though he did not go to Mass. So
it's only a short time he had to
go. Yeah,
well, you know, something that hasn't been brought up, we thought about the priest, because we were worried about ourselves, because obviously this person's going to die pretty soon. He's probably going to kill himself. He's probably going to try again. And we were concerned about how we were going to have to carry that burden, that we were the only people in the world that knew, and one person, and we didn't do anything. You know,
or
we did respect the person.
Let me ask you a point of information about Mary. If you had gone to the priest, is the priest obligated to intervene, or is this confidentiality? I mean,
yeah,
could they go to the priest? That happens to be
that's a question we were talking
about.
We were
hoping to do it in confidentiality. We figured that would be the
right,
most confidential thing to do. But we felt like that would be a big burden to carry that around.
Yeah. And this, do you know, Mary, what the...
I honestly don't know. If somebody confesses to a priest that he's going to kill himself,
Matthew
what
confesses confession? To the priest, that is a confession. The priest cannot
do
betray that confession.
It,
you know, if you tell the priest, I think the priest then becomes obligated to try to stop it.
Like the social
because
worker?
Because the priest, I mean, obviously, the Catholic religion is that suicide is a mortal sin.
Right.
You will go to hell. There is no purgatory, no nothing. That's the end of it. I mean, that's terrible.
That's
and
a helpful
the
distinction.
Then becomes,
I think that's
obligated.
Okay. We have only about, like, 30 seconds. Sorry to say. We need to probably skip over the feelings about this, although I urge you to be talking with each other or with us about how it felt to be talking about this. I do want to tell you what happened with the case. This is a case I worked with probably 4 or 5 years ago now, I think. The actual case is that I was the one who knew, and the friend and the social worker knew. So that I did call a psychologist and said, you need to see this guy before I can release him from the hospital. Because he told me that this was a suicide attempt. He did not say to me that he would do it again necessarily, but he implied it by not wanting a visiting nurse to come out to the home. Sent him over to a psychologist who evaluated him and said he's not suicidal today, which is about what he can do.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent him home. He came. The friend checked in on him pretty frequently. I neglected to mention, I did tell one group, that the initial incident that brought him to the hospital in the first place, the friend discovered him at the house, nearly comatose from the overdose. The friend carried terrible guilt that she brought him to the hospital. She said, I knew that he didn't want to live, and I panicked, and I called 911. Now he's in the hospital, and I feel awful, because he's got to go through all this other pain. That's a separate whole issue that would have confused us even more. He came back in about 10 days later, choking essentially. He could not swallow because of the tumors all through his throat. So he essentially was hospitalized, kept on pain medication, and died within about 2 days because he couldn't eat or breathe or do anything. I went to the funeral. His family was contacted that he died. At that point, the law in Minnesota did not say you had to put AIDS on a death certificate per se. Doctor put Kaposi's sarcoma, I'm sure, which is true. That's what killed him. The family, as far as I knew, did not ever question or ask anymore. They didn't want to know. They had a Catholic service in the funeral home, not in the church, which said to me they must have at some level maybe known something about it. It's an extremely sad service from my point of view. So he really died with his family not knowing anything about this, except he'd come into the hospital and he had this cancer, and that's what they talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how.
Did they live far away?
No, they lived about 40 miles away.
What happened to his lover? Had he already died, or?
He didn't have a lover. No, I mean, nobody that was significant.
So we talked about that too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a good question.
Did the friend do any counseling at the end of this after?
The friend was in bad shape
sort
of all the way through. She wasn't even like a close friend. It's a woman. She was a work colleague. And she'd come to me early on and said, my gosh, he says I'm his only friend. Who knows this? I already know the guy. So we made sure she had some significant help from early on through it.
Mary, isn't it reasonable to think the family really did know and is carrying this around?
Yes, it's very reasonable.
Oh, yeah.
The Catholic priest for the hospital worked with a lot of people with AIDS, did the service. And I don't know what happened to his home priest. I frankly never quite got that. This priest made a point of doing several follow-up visits with family, not to tell them anything they didn't ask about per se, which is another issue about truth-telling and do we always tell the truth? Is it the right to know, blah, blah, blah. As far as I know, they never asked him, but he did a lot of counseling with them sort of around it, and he said, I assumed that they knew, and they assumed that I knew, and we never really
We're going to need to let people go in just a moment. I want to say a couple of things, but if the bell rings, feel free to dash off for first setting lunch. We've been talking with a lot of you in between times. One of the things we wanted to mention is we're putting case studies out here that are really crisis-oriented and really put the issues sharply in conflict. But we're doing that with the recognition that these same principles and issues are involved in lots of interactions we have all through life. We can all think of examples where confidentiality, honesty, respect for a person's autonomy affects us at a wide variety of levels. What I encourage you to keep thinking about is how you respond in different situations. For example, I'll just speak personally on this. I had actually in my own family a situation fairly similar to this where a cousin of mine who was had AIDS committed suicide. A little bit different, but somewhat similar. And many of these different issues were involved. But I was really struck with, when we did the decision about dying last night, the large majority of us kind of took the consequentialist oriented one. We considered all the consequences, and that was how we made our decision. Many, many of the issues we talked about here brought up were much more in the what we call the absolutist or the deontological one. And I know for my, and I would agree with this, I know for myself as a gay man, the issue of confidentiality when someone has told you that they're gay or AIDS, for me is close to being absolutist. There has to be an enormous, enormous reason to break that confidentiality for me personally. So with respect to those issues, I operate out of the more absolutist approach. With some of the issues we were doing last night, it was more consequentialist. It's helpful, I think, sometimes to see in what situations we operate or degrees of gradation. We also brought up, somebody brought up the example of if you're at a store and someone gives you an extra dollar back at the end and you go home and you realize it, what do you do? What do you do if it was $10? What do you do if it was $100? Doesn't make a difference. What do you do if you get some? It doesn't make a difference in terms of the principles involved in how you approach it. Which store? Does the store outside in South Africa? Okay, we'll let you go, but thanks again.